How are you guys doing? This is Martin from Gardens for Life and Bird on Homestead. So we are live again for a chat with our audience. And I'd like to find out whether some of you might have some questions. If you like to, you can ask questions or suggest topics. Anything to do with gardening, homesteading, or anything beyond, even home brewing and chicken keeping, for example. And I know a little bit about solar panels and that kind of thing, but I'm still learning, and we'll just wait until some of you are joining. Tonight we're going to have another little giveaway, so basically a free draw for a 50 euro voucher for our online shop. So what we'll do is, as people come into the live feed here, I can see the numbers are going up, we will just run a quick banner to get you guys the first opportunity to enter our little giveaway again. And even if you did win it before, we do these every week, at least for a while anyway. And if you did win one before, you can still enter again. You're very welcome to, and you have just as good a chance to get another. But that said, if you don't win, don't be disappointed, because we'll have another one next week and we'll be giving away another voucher. So now let me see here. If you have any questions, let me know. Just put the word question up front and put it into the chat. Can you hear me okay? Today I'm going to try and show you a little video of the woodchip island and its progress, how it was made anyway, and what it looked like actually only a couple of years after it was made. The woodchip island is simply a garden, actually, that is, first it was no dig, and then we added wood chips on top. And so it's the same thing as a lasagna garden, really. We just put down cardboard, then a good 6 inch or 15 centimeter thick layer of compost, and then the same again in wood chips, just to stop the grass seeds from germinating, because the grasses were going crazy, just going to seed all around us in our acre of a field. And it was really just a matter of defending that little piece of ground that we wanted to cultivate. Well, I think it was about 600 square meters. That's about a sixth of an acre that we utilized in the very beginning. And some of it was paths as well. So please let me know if you have any questions at all, and if you can hear me okay. I'm going to take a look at the chat every once in a while. Oh, thank you, Bianca. Thanks for joining. Always a pleasure. Bianca is my wife, and she's sitting in the other building over there. Let me see now. So at the moment, we actually have an awful lot of raspberries just starting to come in, but the birds are taking them. And that's just the way it is when you have a lot of bird pressure. We don't really consider it pressure. We do rather just spend our fruits actually feeding the wildlife, rather than buying some kind of grains and feeding them to the birds. Well, at least in the winter time we might, but in general, throughout, especially the breeding season, or when the birds need to eat a lot because they have got to go and find food for their young in the nest, in early summer, I guess they're still in it. And we like to feed the birds with some of our early berries. We don't mind if they take some of them, or maybe even nearly all of them. Usually we have two waves of raspberries, one in early summer, like right around now, just starting, and one in September. So in September, we get to keep them all. Unfortunately, we have very wet Septembers in Ireland. Well, actually last year in July, it started raining and it didn't stop until probably April of this year. Literally, it was a washout, if you want to call it that, a washout of a year. And now we're able to definitely do a lot more work out there in the gardens because it's dry. It hasn't rained much in the last 6 weeks. Hopefully that trend continues, and hopefully we'll get a bit more heat yet, because it's only 15 or 16 degrees here in the Midlands of Ireland. For those of you who are not here, I like to always say where we are. Give me a second. You can see I'm in Birdland Music Studio at the moment. If you'd like to take a look at my wife Bianca's website, you can do so by going to birdlandmusicstudio.ie. Bianca, if you like, you could give us a link on the chat. Now, let me see if you guys have any questions. I see we have a question here from Mike. Do you know, or when do you know fruit is ready to pick, especially before the birds decide it's ripe? So the color is one thing, obviously. Fruits going red or black, well, that's usually obviously the first indication that the fruit is going ripe, but it is not ripe yet until it's soft. So Mike, the first thing we do with especially our black currants, especially our very big black currants, they're the size of a jostaberry actually, and they're sweet, but only if you pick them when they're ripe. And most black currant varieties are not very sweet, but as long as you pick them when they're soft, they should be fine. So that's how you know if a berry is hard, it's not ready, even if it has the right color. But we like to plant out things like camouflage berries that remain green, or even that only go yellow or golden when they ripen, like golden raspberries, for example, or white currants, or green hinomaki, that's the Japanese gooseberry. So any kind of green gooseberries that don't go red when they ripen, they're excellent. So this is Bianca's website. Hang on now. I can't really copy that now. And if you'd like to know more about this studio and Bianca's wonderful music, she's a wonderful musician and songwriter and composist. How do you say it? Componist. Definitely well worth taking a look at. Bianca's actually making her album now. It's actually very relevant because we have two businesses, so that's how we are able to support ourselves throughout the year, even during the downtime for the garden. Funny enough, actually, that we have a downtime in the garden during the growing season. In the summertime, Gardens for Life is a lot less busy than during the winter, because in the wintertime, it's bare root season and cuttings and all that, and tubers, of course. All the oka, mashua, yakon, Jerusalem artichokes, Chinese artichokes, all those kind of tubers are going to be dug up and harvested throughout the winter, and that's when they're available. Now, let me see here. Have you guys got any other questions? Let me know. What I'm going to try is I'm going to just see if I can... let me see here if I'm able to. I'm just gonna put you guys into a view here, because I've got a video to show you of the Woodchip Island. That's what we called it, because literally it's an island of wood chips in the middle of a field, and that was our first garden at our bigger garden, which is not here at our house. But let me see if I can blend you in. Okay, just please let me know after you see this whether you can see it okay. So this is just a little bit of a video. I'm just going to show you 30 seconds or so, or a minute, just to see what it actually started off as. I might even pause it here because I don't have any pictures. This week I didn't go out there and take pictures. I'm going to do that for next Thursday, and I'm going to just comment on the pictures and show you guys the progress around our homestead and our gardens. At the moment, I'm still fighting the weed pressure, of course. All the nettles and grasses are going to seed, and it is a bit of a bother. I've managed much better than any other year up to now, because I am gone full-time. I have gone full-time on the garden business, so I definitely have more time, but at the same time, there is a lot of things to do in the gardens. Anyone that has a garden, you'll know there's really infinite potential for improvement, which is all part of the fun. And we don't want the gardens to be perfect, but we do want them to be functional, and we want them to be productive and low maintenance as well. You can see here, this is the Woodchip Island. So we started that off. That was the first year, actually. I grew some different vegetables. I had nowhere else to plant all of these new plants that I was trying out, like a lot of the new kale varieties. This is actually back 7 years now. Actually, pretty much 6 years ago, I made that garden. And with the help of our neighbor, Brendan, again, with the tractor and the front loader, that helped us a lot. That was 2 loads of compost, for those of you interested. 2 15-ton loads of compost. And 2 very big trailer loads of wood chips. So those were silage trailer loads. So a year later, the perennials are still growing. And you can see we've also established a perimeter. And you can see here, only 2 years into it, and I'm just going to pause it here for a second, you can see all these herbaceous perennials are really coming into their own. Like this is a marshmallow plant. I'm sure you can see the mouse here. Just let me know in the comments. I'm just going to move on here in a couple of minutes. But just let me know in the comments if the video looks okay to you or is it very low frame rate. So Jerusalem artichokes, they're always growing fine. And they're always clumping. People say once you plant them, they'll take over the place. That's not true because the Jerusalem artichokes that we plant, we simply harvest around them just on the outside so that we kind of contain them that way, and that way you get the biggest tubers as well. But with all of our Jerusalem artichokes, we've just been harvesting them non-stop year after year basically without having to do any replanting. Whatever you leave behind in the soil, you basically can never find them all, and they're gonna regrow and populate the area again that you have allocated to your sunchokes. So can see here, this is actually now about 3 years later, I'd say, about 3 years later, maybe 3.5. And this has actually literally turned into a little bit of a forest garden. So that's my first experiment that I wanted to do. I wanted to create a low maintenance forest garden with all herbaceous perennials in the understory. And you have the, so that's like plants that die back in the winter completely down to the ground, and then they come back. So they're not woody plants. Woody plants keep growing bigger and bigger, like a shrub or a bush or a tree. But even the trees here now, they're mostly some apple trees and a couple of plum trees from Aldi and Lidl, and they weren't great, to be honest. I wouldn't recommend buying them. They're certainly cheap. They're about €5 a piece. But if you're going to plant a fruit tree, unless you have like 10 acres or 5 acres, I wouldn't bother with apple trees from or plum trees from Aldi and Lidl, because the space is just too precious. You might as well spend €20 or €25 per tree and get a good quality tree with an old variety as well. Irish Seed Savers usually has them, but you need to be on the ball to get them because apple trees always sell out every year. And then you're stuck with all those other varieties that are not as desirable. So, but it was definitely, you can see it here. That's comfrey here in the foreground. And you have some raspberries and some Portuguese kale. That Portuguese kale is still there. This is probably 4 years, I'd say 3.5 years after planting. Or after this video here. And you can see valerian here on the left as well. And we have some goji berry trees as well. So forest gardening is really probably the main passion. So the video continues then into a more detailed version. Now I'm just going to take a look. Could you guys see the video okay? Or how was that? Was the frame rate good? Was it smooth enough? Because I just want to know, because I have more videos than pictures, and I don't usually go out there and take pictures in the garden. I'd like to show progress to you guys once a week, kind of to hold myself accountable as well, but also because I'd always like to hear what other people think about what we're doing here. And maybe we can have some kind of mutual benefit. Maybe you guys can learn from what we're doing, what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong as well. Bit laggy, yeah, that's all right. No, the next time we'll We'll try and have a little bit of a picture collection and it'll help. All right. How are you doing, Marie? Thank you for joining. And April, thank you for joining. And Mike, of course. How's everything in Strokestown? Let me see here. If you guys have any questions at all, please let me know. And I will keep an eye on the chat here. We're on two YouTube channels, on Facebook and on Twitter, or X, as it's known as now. Oh, so John is asking a question here. Do tiger nuts need damp ground? No, not particularly. I planted them into no-dig garden beds, but if your tiger nuts didn't grow, that could be for a couple of different reasons. I had some duds too, so if you bought the tiger nuts from us and they're not growing, please email me. It's just contact@gardensforlife.ie. Hang on. Here's the email address, and we will happily replace your tiger nuts for you. We'll send you some new ones in the next week or two. And the thing about tiger nuts is you have to really soak them overnight, at least 24 hours in water, and they will triple in size. And they can be planted into a tray with some potting compost or a seed starting compost. Just got to keep them really wet, really moist, and in the tray. And you got to, they don't need light at this point, but you need a lot of heat. So tiger nuts really need it very hot for them to even germinate. And usually 25 degrees is not uncommon. If you can keep that temperature consistently over a period of 2 weeks or so, you should get germination. Now, of course, it's very warm. I'd say maybe on a windowsill, it should work fine in the house. If your house is quite warm, maybe even between the radiator and the window. And as soon as they start growing, they get a bit of light too. So they don't grow too lanky when they do germinate. Because I did start some tiger nuts before in March, and they grew fine on a windowsill in the house. So, but you can also grow them in the greenhouse as well. But trouble we have here in Ireland, if that's where you're based, in the evening time it gets cold. So even during the day, it's not particularly warm, even in the greenhouse. If it's 15 degrees outside and not very sunny, you know, you'd be lucky to get 25 degrees Celsius in the greenhouse. And I say Celsius because some of us, some of you guys are from America and other countries that use Fahrenheit. So we like to specify what nomination our temperatures are. And we are probably dropping to about 8 or 10 degrees Celsius in at nighttime here. So in the greenhouse, it's not a whole lot warmer. You might be dropping to 15 degrees. So a little bit too cold for tiger nuts to even start up, even though it's July. This is midsummer now, and we have not had a heat wave. That other heat wave was cancelled. There was meant to be a heat wave a couple of weeks ago, but I guess that just didn't happen. The wind turned, and the old cold air from Greenland was coming in again. We need to turn on the Gulf Stream again. Well, I'm sure the Gulf Stream is there in terms of water pushing up, but air, especially when we get a wind coming up from the tropics, Ireland can get really warm. Like, we even had temperatures of up to about 30 degrees here in the Midlands, fairly commonly, actually. So I see there's a question here. Hello, Elizabeth. How are you doing? Elizabeth is asking, I have a new raspberry plant that only produced from one branch. And the bigger branches, which ended up just giving me leaves. So with raspberries, it depends on whether it's a primacane or a regular one. Does the raspberry produce canes? It will produce canes from spring, usually until about now, when after the midsummer solstice, wood usually starts hardening off. So growth definitely slows down. and over a 6-week period, it'll go woody. So that's not really related, but it is important because our raspberry plants will actually produce fruit on this year's cane, this year's canes that it grew in spring in September. And also again on the same canes, I'm just going around a year, all the way to June. So just about now, actually, July even. It is a bit late in the year now for them to fruit, our ones anyway. But usually you get fruit probably about midsummer and in autumn again off primacane raspberries. So those are our favorite ones. You can also get raspberries that are autumn fruiting that only produce fruit in the autumn and they have a much bigger yield. And some people swear by them. However, as I said earlier, trouble is in September, it can be very wet here in Ireland and that one raspberry goes rotten and then 10 other raspberries will also go rotten around it. So it's just a kind of chain reaction at that stage. And we are pretty much, the mold eats all the raspberries in autumn and the birds eat all the raspberries in summer. What can you do? Plant more raspberries. You could plant some in the greenhouse as well. But I wouldn't recommend it because they're awful weedy and they go rooting around and come up everywhere. So you never know. Raspberries have definitely been the most weedy plant in my gardens, as well as creeping buttercup, of course, and nettles and grasses, obviously. So let me see here. Do you guys have any other questions? So sorry, Elizabeth, just to finish off my answer, I'm not sure if I did answer your question correctly. I'd say just let it grow and it'll fruit when it's ready to fruit on those other branches. So don't worry. Before you know it, you put a raspberry in the ground. We like to grow, even if you plant just one raspberry plant, but if you grow a few, it'll turn into a few in 1 year. And then in 2-3 years, you're going to have loads of raspberries, loads of raspberry canes. And just make sure you put them in an area where they have a bit of room to expand. Don't plant them somewhere where there is other plants that are huge, like say marshmallow plants or whatever, any kind of other berry bushes that are crowding it out, because it will eventually shade those plants out. So it's not really a good match, but at the same time, it's worth giving the raspberry a bit of space because they do expand over time. And as long as the raspberry is expanding, as long as the new raspberry plants or canes that are popping up in your garden are near your original plant, you're going to have the same variety because it was just grown from a root sucker rather than from seed. So if you have a raspberry plant that popped up somewhere on its own in the garden that you didn't plant, the birds probably planted it, and that may not be a good thing because a lot of berries, I think strawberries are a little different, especially wild strawberries like alpine ones. But I reckon raspberries, you're going to end up with if it's planted from seed, you're probably going to end up with a variety that has very small berries, and it's probably going to be very thorny canes as well, very prickly. So I wouldn't bother keeping a lot of those because they spread very quickly. And just like animals that actually go back into the wild, even cultivated varieties of raspberry or any kind of berries or fruit will return to its original form very quickly in a couple of generations if let free. But that's always been our plan, to actually just do the no-dig gardening, the lasagna, and then forest gardening. So basically just covering the whole area with wood chips and planting your perennials and your understory fruit trees and berry bushes, ground cover, and all that. And then just keep weeding it a little bit. Keep getting rid of all the weeds. I'm just kind of picking them out in between all the rest of the plants that I planted. And I'm actually going to let nature take more and more control of those forest gardens or lasagna gardens, because I want to have less maintenance and I want nature to decide the spacing, for example. But also I want to make sure I keep the weeds out by simply using planting techniques rather than muscle power, like having to actually spend time out there and pulling them all up. It's not really good use of your time or anyone's time. I think you're better off to just plant it densely so that you form your leaves, or your plant, the leaves of your plants actually form a canopy, and basically not let much sunlight down to the ground, so that the weeds don't really have much of a chance, even if they do grow there. So let me just take a look. Jeez, gone dry there. Let me see here. Hello, Mena. How are you doing? I'm going to check here. Another question about tiger nuts, actually. So can I still plant them, or should I keep them for next year? Oh, you can still plant them, absolutely. Soak them overnight, again, at least 24 hours in water. Drinking quality water I would use. And you can plant those out. You could even keep them somewhere very warm, and you could plant them into a tray with some seed starting compost, but keep them very moist and very, very warm. If you don't keep them very warm, they won't start up. And if you have any trouble at all, let me know. Oh, just give me one second here. Oh, thank you. Bianca brought me another glass of water, a backup glass. Jeez, I'm gone awful dry. We were working on the house actually today and yesterday. We're just renovating a couple of the bedrooms, and one of the floors has to come out. I'm sure any of you that have bought old cottages have had some experience with that. And because usually there's no insulation in any of these older houses, especially our one is actually from 1938, but it was updated and extended in about 90. And there's still, you know, still a bit of work to do. The work never stops once you have a house, and you can rest assured anything you do on the house, any investment that you do in terms of money or time or effort, it's always going to make your quality of life a little bit better on a daily basis. So why not spend time? Sometimes we gotta take a step back and spend more time improving our daily lives, actually. Like fixing all the little things that you kind of have to, that you should have probably just spent a little bit of time fixing. And it would have made my life easier to fix the old lever on the chicken coop doors. And I just need to spend 10 minutes fixing it properly so that I don't have to fiddle with it every day. So overall, definitely solving all your problems is the way to clear your mind and move forward with clarity, in the words of Anton Krill. Anton Krill is very good. He has a lot of good advice. Again, Mela, just on tiger nuts, just make sure you keep them very warm and keep them very moist. You can keep them in the house on the windowsill or in a greenhouse if you live in a country that where it's very warm. And if they don't start up, if you bought them from us, let me know. Send me an email, contact@gardensforlife.ie. We'll happily replace them for you, because we had some duds as well. Probably caused by some storage. So, oh, you're very welcome. Yeah, we like to include some free gifts. We usually do a lot of seed saving in our gardens, and one of those plants is actually not only like poppies, they're easy, marigolds, but also we have great mullein and various other plants. But great mullein seeds and Portuguese kale seeds and red Russian kale seeds and Sutherland kale. So we've got three different kale seeds, seed varieties. And we like to pack them up into little bags and send them as free gifts with every order. Anyone that places an order on our website, we like to try and give you as much value as we can. So our website, hang on. Where is it? Here it is. And we highly appreciate it if you give us some support. We do have a Patreon page as well. I'm just going to put that into the comments here in a second. And we also have a members page also, which is just guidanceforlife.ie/members. And if you guys would like to support us, you can do that. Even if you just give us a thumbs up, we'd highly appreciate it, you know. And even the fact that you're here at all and listening, is we really do appreciate that too. And if you have any questions at all for me, let me know. Whether it's gardening, homesteading, or business, anything in between. So let me see here. I'm just going to add the links to the live stream. We do have the onions are being harvested soon now. So I'm going to be harvesting the elephant garlic now in the next week or so. The leaves have wilted and they're gone yellow. And the elephant garlic, as some of you will know, they're huge. They're like probably 3 feet or 90 centimeters tall, the plant itself, if you don't let it go to seed. And it's, look, the leaves just looks like a kind of a leek, actually. And we are harvesting those and drying them for a couple of weeks. And then we're going to send those out. So any of you guys that ordered, pre-ordered as part of our Allium sale, all the different varieties of garlic we have and onions, a lot of perennial onions too, Egyptian walking onions. And we have some potato onions, but they're not available this year to our audience. And we do have elephant garlic and a couple of other varieties as well. Isle of Wight and the Purple Morado. So I have a question here from Mike. Can you can fruit? If so, is it different from canning meat or vegetables? There is not really any difference if you're using a pressure canner, because a pressure canner brings the temperature above boiling. So that means because it's steam and the pressure is held in, 10 psi of pressure is about equal to 116 degrees Celsius in a pressure canner. And the botulism spores cannot survive beyond 112 degrees. So as long as you stick to the right time, like you got to look up the recipe if you're canning fruit, it doesn't really matter if it's like an acidic fruit, it probably takes less time, or if it's a sweet fruit. So usually sugar, salt, or vinegar will actually reduce your time that you have to put it through the pressure canner or the regular water bath canner as well. You can also can vegetables the same way as fruits or meats, really. I don't know, Mike, you probably remember we were talking about canning before. I have had some videos, actually. I made a video about canning meat. You can can fruits and veg the same way. I just don't bother because we only have so many jars, and jars are a little expensive. And it's just kind of not really worth my time at the moment to can fruits or vegetables. Fruits mainly because we kind of want to eat the berries we have in season. But I think drying them or even freeze drying them, if you can have access to a freeze dryer, you can actually achieve better results. With fruits, once you're boiling it, the vitamins are gone. But if you're drying it out, there's a lot more vitamins left in it and a lot more flavor, especially with berries. But if you're using heat to dry out berries, you have other problems, like the flavor kind of goes away and you're better off to use a freeze dryer, of course. But who has access to a freeze dryer in Ireland? Probably not many people. Do any of you guys in the audience here have a freeze dryer? Please let me know. I think it'd be great if we could have some kind of just get together and have a little bit of a community get together here in Ireland locally. And maybe we can eventually get to the point where we can invest in tools like a freeze dryer or other tools like a vacuum chamber sealer. Just kind of as a community pool our money. Just so, because you're not going to use it every day anyway of the year. So you can make use of your produce. But I would definitely grow tomatoes, cucumbers, as in for pickling, and beans, like bush beans or French beans, basically. Maybe runner beans, young runner beans. I would can those. If you're growing it yourself, if you're growing the food yourself, it's probably worth canning. Fruits, probably not so much. Berries, I would freeze them. And that also makes them very easily usable for both juicing, but as well as making wine as well, or smoothies. So berries are actually ideally frozen because it's a lot less work, and you can actually juice them as well, but you don't have to. We do have a slow juicer as well, so we can actually make a so-called iron juice. Bianca, one time, I'll just tell you this little story. One time our freezer became unplugged, and we had like 10 kilos of berries that we took painstakingly gathered in our gardens, and unfortunately they all defrosted at once, so we had to do something with these 10 kilos of defrosted berries on that day. So Bianca just sent them through the juicer, and then we were drinking the juice off them. It was all black currants, raspberries, red currants, all the good stuff, some gooseberries in it too. But Jesus, that juice gave you so much energy. That must have been still a lot of enzymes in them too. It's like a probiotic, like your body's just tanking you. Bianca called it iron juice. It's kind of like it's kind of like the potion out of Popeye or something like that, eating spinach. But that's what happens even when you drink, like, say, a sea buckthorn juice. It's just you just feel good all of a sudden after drinking, because the body is just thanking you for drinking it, I guess, because there's so much vitamin C in it. Sea buckthorn is the citrus of the cold temperate, by the way. And I'm going to grow a lot more of those this year. I have some sea buckthorn males and female varieties that I have been growing for a few years. And we're going to be enjoying a few berries this year too. I just pick them directly off the bush and eat them, because we don't have that many yet. Now, so here's another question from Vanessa. Hello, Vanessa. When do you take cuttings off your fruit bushes? Well, the best time of the year is actually any time really from January until September. I wouldn't bother after the end of September, because the cuttings won't grow and they probably won't root before the winter, and they might be a little weak to get through the winter. And they also might not root before the winter and go rotten. So basically January to September, of course, if it's from January until about April or May, it's going to be hardwood because there's no leaves and it's last year's wood. And after that, in midsummer, up until now, you can take softwood cuttings, and they're much more successful because they have a much fresher, a lot thicker cambium layer. That's the green layer under the outer bark. And they basically will root much faster because they have a lot of stem cells in them that can turn into roots. And after midsummer, say 6 weeks after midsummer, is when it's called a semi-hardwood cutting. So that's when a green softwood cutting turns brown and woody, and you can no longer bend it. It'll snap if you try to bend it. So that's when it's called a semi-hardwood cutting. And we have semi-hardwood cuttings are probably the easiest to root, but just make sure you don't have too many leaves on it. Same as softwood. Just only keep like a couple of little leaves, or maybe cut the leaves on top to a good proportion of wood, because there's no roots to supply those leaves with moisture. And you can probably end up with a dried out cutting, and it'll not do well. So it's better to have a good ratio between leaves and wood. So folks, if you want to enter today's it's not a contest, it's a giveaway. It's not even a raffle, but give me a second. Here you go. We have a banner here on the screen now. So just type the word enter into the chat. It's free. You can just enter for free. And I have a random number, not a random number generator, but a random commenter picker here on another website. And we are going to pick a random winner out of all you guys that say enter. So it's a 50-euro voucher for those of you on the audio only. And in if you want to enter these kind of contests, you have to be here in person. You cannot enter after the live is over. So if you're watching this later, it's too late to enter the live show because we're going to announce the winner shortly. Actually, we'll give people a few minutes anyway to enter, and we might just take one or two more questions in the meantime. Let me see here. Again, if you want to enter the giveaway, it's free for a 50-euro voucher for our online shop. And this is our online shop. It's also in the comments for on these live streams. I'm saying live streams because we are currently streaming to two YouTube channels, Facebook and X, or formerly known as Twitter. And we have plants available. And if you, even if you're not based in Ireland or in Europe, if you're based in the US or elsewhere, you can still enter. You can use your 50-euro voucher towards our No Dig online course. And that's actually 69 euro, but we'll we won't mind you using it for that to buy the online course as well. So it's also available on the shop. If you want to take a look at the shop, we just have at the moment we have plants, a lot of different plants actually available, very interesting plants too, if I may say so myself. So there's American elder, comfrey, perennial borage. We have some grapes coming up now. We have some hardy kiwis that are self-fertile. So lots of good plants. We also have some root cuttings available and 16 varieties of mint. You got to take a look at those. I might even make a video about mint actually shortly. It's just kind of hard to find the time to make all these videos that I have ideas for. But banana mint is the newest one. And we have ginger mint and lots of different varieties of mint. And once you have it, once you have the mint once, you'll have it almost forever. I almost lost some of our mint, actually. The pineapple mint, do you remember that one? That's kind of variegated in white. And it's a beautiful mint. It was actually also in that video from earlier there. And in the Woodchip Island, and actually almost lost it. I had just been harvesting a good bit of the mint, basically just the roots in the winter time, but then other plants came along and actually smothered the mint plant. So mint is not as vicious as people make it out to be. It does spread, yes, but it's not that bad. I don't think it's that bad. I even planted it straight into 4 inches of compost, so you know, in a no-dig garden bed, but there was other plants competing, so that definitely could have been part of the reason why it didn't take over, because the raspberries were just towering it. And there also was a, what was the name of it, an olive, autumn olive or Russian olive on the other side, which we still have not seen any berries off of yet. Does anyone in the audience here have autumn olive trees, I wonder? And are they fruiting for you? I was wondering about that. I tried growing Siberian pea shrub and it just didn't, they didn't really do very well. And black locust as well. They just didn't do very well here in Ireland. I don't think they didn't even survive it. They didn't even survive after 3 years. They were just gone, perished. And another one that was not a success was actually persimmon. I bought 3 persimmon trees, and they were actually grafted trees. They were good varieties as well. One of them was a Nikita's Gift, which is actually just a cross between the Japanese persimmon and American persimmon. So it's a good variety, but the tree is not doing too well. It's just grown very, very slowly. Figs do better in Ireland if you want to grow something exotic, but definitely start off with easy varieties of fig, like the brown turkey. That's the one. If you're going to grow it outside, you're probably better off to grow a brown turkey, just because it grows, it doesn't mind, it grows a bit better. Like, it doesn't mind the cold too much. And indoors, they all do much better. I found they grow about twice as fast indoors. Oh, hard to keep talking for like three quarters of an hour now. Let me see here. So if you'd like to enter our context, please put the word enter into the chat, all capital letters, and we will pick a winner. So I see here somebody said, Kev said, I planted fennel beside my apple trees. The fennel has gotten really big. You'd like to move it. Well, when is the best time to move it? Okay. So in the winter time, and I like to actually grow plants, maybe not necessarily fennel, but fennel could work too in the same context. I like to grow other plants around my fruit trees, like red currants, white currants, and rhubarb. I throw them in the same hole as the fruit tree. Excuse me. And they grow in the same space. So they kind of are another layer to the seven layers of the forest model. And they are going to benefit the fruit tree because you're attracting beneficial insects and you're blocking the weeds on the ground as well. So the rhubarb definitely helps with that. And if the rhubarb goes to seed, which it will eventually, it'll go flowering, it'll actually attract an enormous amount of insects from the area all around that fruit tree, including early pollinators. So if you have trouble with pollination, I would actually plant more plants that go to flower around you, especially around your fruit trees, just because it attracts, of course, if you provide the food, the insects come. You're attracting insects. But if you get them to stay, if you provide them with habitat for overwintering, you can get them in there early on in spring, if that's when you want your fruit trees to be pollinated. Other than that, probably early summer, if there's a late frost, that's another problem. But it depends on what varieties of fruits you're growing too. If you have trouble with late frosts, you're probably better off to grow varieties of fruit that actually flower later. So now let me see here. Again, we are going to have our contest for a 50 euro voucher for our online shop. This is the link for our online shop if you'd like to take a look at what we have. And if you make a purchase, that we would highly appreciate as well. Even if you don't win the voucher, don't worry. You can enter again next week, next Thursday at 9 p.m. GMT. That is Dublin time. And Greenwich Mean Time. Isn't that right? That's what we use here on the British Isles. Now, let me see here. Oh, hello, Anne. How are you doing? One of our neighbors. I see you're saying the Portuguese kale is doing very well. Yeah, I know we like the Portuguese kale, but we have some other varieties now, Anne, that we can give you. We have Taunton Dean and Daubenton kale, and they're really nice. One is purple and the other is white with variegated leaves. So there's like a certain kind of, on the outside of the leaf, it's all white. And they're really ornamental and they're every bit as tasty, and they're more hardy than the Portuguese kale. So if any of you other guys here that are not neighbors of ours actually would like to take a look at our online shop, there is some kale cuttings also available as well. And you can grow these indefinitely. You can start with one cutting and then just grow that plant. And after a while, you can take, as it grows bigger, you can take cuttings off that plant and just multiply it from there until you have more kale than you can eat. And that's never a problem, especially if you have chickens, because chickens love kale. And you're better off to feed them a bit of kale every day anyway. It'll definitely improve the quality of your eggs and your chicken's diet and health as well. And that's why we try to grow as much kale as possible, just to have trying to have a bit of greens for them throughout the winter. Now, we're going to be picking a winner now. Let me see here. I'm just going to run the random number generator which is actually a website. It's all very sophisticated these days with all these draws and raffles and all the rest. So it's not like raffle tickets anymore where you just pick it out of a draw. And the winner is T. Innerst. Please send me an email to contact@gardensforlife.ie. Let me see here. Please, you can do that now or straight after this show. We're going to finish it soon now anyway. Just send me an email, T. Innerst, please. You are the winner. Congratulations. You won a 50 euro voucher. And you can use it anytime in the next few months. So whenever there is no panic. Now, let me see here. And so if you want to, you can get plants on our website, or if you don't live nearby, if you don't live in Europe, we don't ship outside of Europe usually, and you can just buy our online course. So just say that in the email address, in the email that you're sending us, if you're not based in Europe, or if you want to, take a look at the shop. And if you are based in Ireland or even in Europe, you can get whatever you like from our shop. So at the moment, we mostly have potted plants, but there are also mint varieties. We have 16 varieties of mint and kale cuttings and some other bits and pieces. And this month, we're actually going to do the alliums. So that's all the garlic and onions, all perennials, of course. Again, we like perennial plants because you are not dependent on the seed shops or the garden centers or anyone else. You can simply keep multiplying from what you have. And you can grow your vegetables and your fruits indefinitely. And that's what it's all about. And of course, you can also scale your plants. You can scale your gardens up and make them bigger exponentially without having to spend a ton of money. So you can just get one of each plant to begin with, or maybe get some cuttings from a friend's garden and just start from there. Anyone in this world can really start a garden, and we are there's no problem. We do ship to Germany. Yeah, that's fine. Oh yes, I remember now. You have a campsite, isn't that right, in Germany? Let me know if you need any advice. You can send me some pictures via email if you like, and I can try and help you out with your food forest design. Isn't that right? That's what you'd like to create. So we like to call it forest garden because it's a more broad definition of the kind of method of planting a garden. So it's usually just perennial plants, herbaceous perennials, some tuberous plants, and that are underground. But then you have some climbers in there, like we have also got tuberous peas. You have mashuas, which is a tuberous nasturtium. But these are climbers. Then you have berry bushes and rhubarb, or herbaceous perennials are flowers that die back in the winter and then they grow back again. They're not woody. And again, berry bushes. Then you have smaller trees. We don't do the canopy trees, the very large trees that take up all the sunlight. We do the fruit trees. So the fruit trees are usually understory. That would be apple, plum, mirabelles, pears, figs, for example. We'd like to grow mulberry as well. Haven't had much success with them now. I also planted some almond trees, but I guess that was a bit too ambitious. I did grow two almond trees. Excuse me. Gotta take a drink of water. I planted persimmon, almonds, and some mulberries, and all of them didn't do very well, unfortunately. But our special variety of rowan berry is doing very well. So maybe we can take some wood off it and graft it onto regular mountain ash trees or rowan berries. That'd be nice if we could get some of those types of trees going. We certainly are looking forward to growing more long-term trees. For example, trees with edible leaves that could be used to either probably feed livestock. Like you can have a livestock feeding system that way on relatively small acreage. And willows are definitely perfect for that. But there's other trees. There are definitely other trees that are available. Mulberry, if I can get it started. And the lime trees are very good for that too. So so let me see here. So you have a half a hectare. Okay, so that's 5,000 square meters. An acre, for those of you out there in Ireland and UK, an acre is 4,000 square meters. So so you have just over an acre, basically just about as much as we have here. But we have also got mature trees all around our house. And we definitely didn't want to take those down because we enjoy the shelter of them, especially in the winter time when it gets cold. And if you can block the wind from hitting your house, it definitely will help a lot with the heating bill. It'll be a lot easier to heat your house. But our house has always been quite warm. Well, that's because we have a very good heating system, but which we'd like to update. Our stove is actually a Stanley Erin, and I'd rather upgrade that for a more modern one. And you can use a modern wood-burning stove, a high-performance model that burns the wood gases as well. So you get 60% more heat. And if you'd like to find out more about that, I would suggest looking up Ben Falk from the Resilient Homestead. That's the name of his book. And I need to get his second edition because there's a lot in it about the hot burning wood stoves. So he lives in a very cold climate. I believe it's in Vermont. I think he actually moved. They moved off the 10-acre property onto a bigger property. I think it's 30 acres or 50 acres or something like that now. And we'd like to scale our couple of acres here up eventually. So we'll see. In the next couple of years, we'd like to acquire some land and do it all again, basically. All right. We will see you next week. And for those of you who would like to support us, a thumbs up would be lovely. And if you'd like to support us more, you can always get something on our shop or buy our No Dig online course, which is available on the website. I must make some videos about that in general. But we also host local events if you guys would like to take a look at that, if you're not too far from us. And if you are based outside of Europe, and if you already know how to start a no-dig garden, you can also support us on our Patreon page and on our members page as well. I just have to edit this link here. We would highly appreciate your support. And we give you many benefits with our membership as well. So like 25% off everything we do. So hopefully the membership pays for itself as it does throughout the year. And we will see you next week. Thanks for joining. Bye-bye.